denied. And we kind of went through the same process. The issues that we had kind of with the first sale was it was unclear as to what the boundary lines were between parcels 1 and parcel 2. There's certain improvements that weren't really addressed, no one really knew. My client had purchased parcel 1, and he didn't know if the improvements were included with his parcel or the other parcel, because it wasn't really ever really addressed. So we're here today for three assignments of error. The first one was that the district court erred by granting a partition for sale instead of a partition in kind. The second is that if a partition for sale is proper, the district court erred in confirming the referee's sale because the referee improperly divided the property, specifically the improvements that went with parcel 1 and parcel 2. And thirdly, the district court erred in allocating personal property of the appellant, David M. Cotter, to the purchaser.
So before you argue further, can we talk about the question of whether we have a mootness issue? I don't recall. I know there was a motion for a summary dismissal that was denied at that time, but I don't recall if you responded to it, or if you would like to respond to that today. It is a concern of the court.
Yes, Your Honor. Our stance on that is that a partition action is an equity action, therefore the appellate court can review that de novo on the record. So therefore we didn't feel that it was moot because of that aspect of that.
Well, but your request for relief is that we reverse the order confirming the sale, but the sale has been closed, the deeds have been recorded, the money's been dispersed, and as I understand the record, there's been no supersedious.
Correct.
So how can the lower court grant that relief? How can we grant that relief and require the lower court to undo the sale?
It would be very messy, if that's the correct word to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the supersedious bond, obviously my client didn't have the money in order to upfront that money to do that bond, or else he would have done that. That's kind of the main reason why he didn't.
But then change the effect
right.
of the lack of a supersedious.
Right. There's only three, I think, landowners that weren't a part of this initial partition action. So we feel that, you know, refunding them their money at this point in the season, at least harvest has been completed, it would be a good time for a transition if that was the position of the court to do that, because their inputs that they put into the nursing irrigated cropland, you know, they're going to be able to receive whatever inputs they put into that. They're able to harvest it. Same with the pasture land. You know, right now is kind of a good time if we're going to make a change. The timing is at least.
Do you have any case law authority in Nebraska to support the relief you request without a supersedious?
I didn't research that to bring to the court today, but.
Okay, thank you. And if there's anything else you want to discuss on that issue, feel free to do that.
Okay. I guess I would just go into what we felt the district court erred. You know, it's a long position in the Nebraska courts that there's a preference for a partition kind over, obviously, the sale. The current referee stated in his report that after an appraisal, it was difficult for the referee to make a determination as to whether it should be divided in kind or sold at auction. And so with him stating that in his report, we felt that the district court judge then should have, at that point, entered an order getting an appraisal of the property to see whether or not that was feasible. That didn't happen. Instead, you know, he went and said that basically we're going to do another sale at that point. There's a substantial amount of ground that could have been divided equally, we feel, if an appraisal was...
Excuse me, I've interrupted you again. Is there any evidence in our record to support that contention? We don't have a bill of exceptions with any evidence, do we?
No.
So, what evidence, and without evidence, how can we find, according to your suggestion.
There's three non-contiguous parcels.
You say we feel that this was inappropriate in terms of the division, that it could have been divided in kind. But what evidence do we have of that?
The referee's reports, basically the documents that were submitted in the transcript that show, I think there's certain exhibits in there that show how Lashley Land divided the parcels. The referee's reports are basically that was the evidence that was presented, and that's what we feel is the relevant evidence in this case.
Were the referee reports offered as exhibits?
Yes, they were.
And that would have been contained in a bill of exceptions, which is evidence upon which we can rely, but not documents contained within the transcript.
Regarding the divided of the property, our main issue was with the way that the improvements were divided. Because there was one parcel that had the east improvements, they basically were divided between the east improvements and west improvements. And so the east improvements included a cattle barn, corral, a livestock water well, and also, and this was associated closely to the pasture ground. We felt that that should have been included with the pasture ground instead of the irrigated cropland, because the purpose of, having the cattle barn and corral is more lucrative for a pasture piece, and that would have, obviously, if that would have been part of that, the purchase price we felt would have been higher at that point if those improvements would have been properly divided in the opposite direction, I guess. And the third thing is regarding the personal property of Mr. David Cotter. The burden of proof was on the plaintiffs in order to show that all those pieces of property, personal property, weren't his, and they didn't meet that burden. And so we felt that Mr. Cotter obviously then basically get his fair share of the one-fourth interest in the rest of this property.
Any further questions?
No.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Rowe, when you're ready. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm pleased to call the opposing counsel. Thank you for having us here today. My name is Brock Worrell. I'm attorney at the Federal Defender of Moreland and Platt. I represent Gregory Cutter, who was the petitioner in this action initially. In our position, two of his brothers, Benjamin Cutter and Brian Cutter, as well as referee Stephen Benton, had joined in our brief. I think there was a note on that for when we submitted the brief. If I may address the issue of mootness that you asked about initially, Mr. Miller, I think this is moot. Where we're at now is that Neil the Cat is not just out of the bag, it's 10 miles down the road. Without the supersedious bond, it would have been improper for the court to not allow the sale to proceed and close. That happened. I believe it was November 1st of last year that the sale closed, so just over a year ago.
And that was after the notice of appeal was filed?
Notice of appeal was filed. There was at least 30 days that had passed, and then the sale closed.
The court went ahead and entered additional orders after the notice of appeal. Is that a problem at all?
I don't think it is because of the lack of supersedious bond. Had the supersedious been filed over the last day, we would be standing here in a completely different situation than what we are now.
In fact, there was a motion to stay, wasn't there, by the appellant that was denied?
There was, yes. There was a motion to stay by the appellant. There was also a motion for distribution. I can't remember if that the motion for distribution of proceeds was filed by the referee or by myself. I'm not sure on that. But, either way, we had our arguments on
ICS.
And these were presented to Judge Urbom. I can give you a few citations here. Enterprise Bank, NA Unite, 20 Nebraska Appellate 662. There's a Traveler's Insurance case in Nelson, which is 4 Nebraska Appellate 551. Where in one of those cases, the court upheld the court of appeals upheld the decision to not stay the proceedings, and in the other one, the district court said, no, we're going to stay the proceedings, in spite of not figuring out the proceedings on, and the court of appeals came back and said, no, there's no supersedious bond. You're essentially giving them the benefit of the supersedious bond without them actually having to perform the act and put forth the money for that. And that's wrong.
Were those in connection with civil judgments, money judgments?
One of them, the Enterprise Bank one, was a mortgage foreclosure action, I think. So it was a real estate action. And the Travelers one, I don't remember offhand what the subject matter of the Travelers case was. They won't upheld that proposition that if there's no supersedious bond, there's no reason to stop moving. If the district court retained jurisdiction at that point, you can make orders as though it was
and you couldn't undo it, right? So that's your question.
Yeah, but the question is, you know, can we, is this moot? You know, do we kick it on that reason or do we address the merits?
I believe it's moot because the supersedious bond was not filed, the action is proceeded. I think the possibility of unwinding it is real.
I mean, you know, we can sit here and talk about practicalities, but of course we're all about legal precedents, so that's what I'm looking for here.
Okay.
We're not supposed to make new law on this court.
But sure, and I understand that, and I'm not asking you to. I'm asking to follow the prior rulings here.
So we can talk about the merits as well.
Can you address the argument that there should have been an appraisal? Had there been an appraisal, then it would have been an in-kind distribution?
The first argument I'd make on that is that the first stage when that argument was made is here at this level. There was never an argument made that there should be an in-kind distribution. Throughout the second sale process. So this is the first time on appeal that this issue is being raised. It was never raised prior to this. So that would be my first point with regard to the appeal. Second is there's plenty of opportunity for appellants to go and get an appraisal or present any evidence whatsoever.
time that you're contesting the sale versus the in-kind distribution.